It's time for Insure Talk with insurance industry tech geek and Guidewire chief evangelist, Laura Drabik. In this podcast series, we don't just talk about innovative ideas in P&C insurance. We talk with industry trailblazers about the big ideas they made happen and how they did it. If you're looking for insights on the trends and technologies reshaping the industry, an all-new Insure Talk starts now.
Welcome to Insure Talk. My name is Laura Drabik, and I'm the Chief Evangelist at Guidewire. In this episode, I have the privilege of interviewing Margaret Russey Milken, Global Insurance Practice Leader at Diversified Search Group, an executive search firm serving numerous industries, including the insurance sector. The topic of our conversation today, winning the war for talent in P&C insurance. The struggle to find talent has gained a whole new level of urgency as the industry continues to undergo unprecedented transformation. Few in the search industry can speak to this battle and how to win it quite like Margaret. As a seasoned talent strategist, DEI champion, and her own evangelist for talent innovation, transformation, and excellence, she is renowned for her market knowledge and emotional intelligence in recruiting and placing top candidates for executive roles in P&C. During our chat today, we'll explore some of the industry's biggest recruitment challenges in a tightly labor market, the keys to overcoming them, and how to ensure that P&C insurers and the organizations and industries that support them can win as competition for top talent hits overdrive. Hello, Margaret. Welcome to Insure Talk.
Well, thank you so much, Laura. It's great to be here with you.
And for our listeners, it is Women's Day as we record this. So happy International Women's Day to you, Margaret.
And to you too, Laura. It's a perfect day for us to have this conversation.
I couldn't agree more. So Margaret, you have deep experience in filling critical roles in property and casualty, including C-suite and other senior leadership roles spanning actuarial, analytics, underwriting, claims, operations, technology, marketing, and more. So you have a unique perspective on the challenges facing the industry today. Let's start, though, with one of my favorite topics, which, because I'm aging, is the aging workforce overall, especially in senior roles. With a wave of retirements expected in the next few years, this won't necessarily slow down anytime soon. And according to Bain & Company, one in every four employees will be 55 or older by 2031, just 7 short years from now. Margaret, give us a read from the front lines. What's the level of concern at carriers and companies in the P&C ecosystem when it comes to attracting the right leaders to navigate this period of change?
Laura, it is a period of great change and opportunity in the P&C sector while there is so much activity going on regarding succession. And it's not just at the senior levels, it's at the mid-level also. So organizations have been really proactive about building the talent pipeline and not burying this issue, but hitting it head on and saying, how can we bring in fresh talent? How can we bring in career changers? How can we look at other industries to bring in talent where we can? So it is real. It is a battle, but there is opportunity. When there is that chance to bring in talent from outside of the industry or a career changer, that creates a fresh perspective. It's not just one way to win this battle, Laura. It really has to be multifaceted. It's building the pipeline with emerging talent out of colleges, business schools, looking at STEM as a way to bring in fresh talent to insurance, and then looking to other industries where there's transferable skills. We're doing it all.
Margaret, you raised something really important, which is looking at other industries. What other industries do you look at to bring into P&C?
Don't laugh at me, but I'm going to say all of them. So traditionally, there is a symbiotic relationship between insurance, financial services, banking, highly regulated industries, but you can call them kissing cousins. There's a lot of similarities. The financial services banking world does look to insurance to bring in talent for their organizations, and we look to them. But why not look at hospitality? Why not look at manufacturing? Why not look at biotech? There's a lot of opportunities. We've gone to the big tech players, the Googles, the Amazons, those players years as well, because they have fresh ideas and perspectives. So I think that when we can go out of industry, and there's certain areas where we can't, but there's a lot that we can, especially in the technology transformation, data analytics space, that is a great opportunity to really bring in that new look. And that has been really meaningful.
On the flip side of all of this, you also have a recent survey from Pew Research that found that nearly 1 in 5 Americans aged 65 and older were employed in 2023, with many planning to continue work in support of their longer, healthier lifespans. You also have Fortune magazine heralding the unexpected upside of an aging workforce. I really enjoyed this article, by the way, and highly encourage our listeners to read it. But this includes the view that older workers tend to be hardworking, indeed, experienced and loyal. As Fortune points out, the presence of retirement age workers used to be rare, but given the current labor shortage in the U.S. and globally, it could be what it calls a win-win for older workers and companies. So my first question to you on this, Margaret, is in P&C insurance, does this potential counter trend apply mostly to rank and file employees, or does it offer at least some hope that recruiting and retaining senior talent won't be quite as arduous as we thought, at least over the near term?
Laura, I think what you said about the win-win is truly real. It applies to all mid-tier, rank and file, but also to senior leaders who are working longer because they're healthy, because they enjoy their work. They want to leave a legacy. They want to train that next generation of talent. They want the succession to be seamless. So I think that in that win-win vein, we have 5 generations working in the workforce today, and we're getting it right. Whether it's underwriting or actuarial or technology or claims, there really is an apprenticeship going on. And that is a great way to do the knowledge transfer and to ensure that everybody's learning from each other. What I'm saying to individuals is say, yes, be a mentor, and yes, be mentored. Take the opportunity to learn from the millennial or the Z generation. They're learning from you. You're learning from them as well. And of course, I'm not leaving out X because they're the great bridge. It's really an exciting time.
You're spot on. The reverse mentoring. Absolutely. I also learn from Gen Zs. But you said something as well, which really caught my attention, which is leaving a legacy. And I never thought about it that way. But, you know, I mentor and I want a seamless transition for people that I mentor or filling a role that I'm leaving. That leaving a legacy, that is just spot on. That's what we're trying to do here. Like, we're not competing. We're actually trying to help and pull up. So thanks for sharing that.
It's my pleasure. And one point on that, I think that's something that's very unique and very attractive about the insurance sector. There is so much purpose and mission baked into this industry. People who are good and who do good. That mission spirit, that purpose drive to do good for policyholders, for the communities they serve in, that is so important to every generation, not just Generation Z and millennials.
So whatever the case, the graying workforce puts new talent dynamics into play for our senior leaders. So what are strategies for sourcing and recruiting executives with an aptitude for embracing recruiting and the ability to effectively manage increasingly multi-generational? You said there's 5 out there right now, multi-generational teams and organizations.
I think we're talking, Laura, about the modern leader, the leader who leads with heart and head, that person that has that spirit that relationships really matter and are not afraid to use their empathy and the human side of their personality, not building barriers, walls, or silos. So I would say that we look for curiosity. We look for kindness. We look for a growth mindset, someone who just loves to learn and has that insatiable curiosity to draw people in. That modern leader who makes sure all the voices are heard and all the voices are at the table. And that spirit of transparency and communication, being real, being honest, creating a bond and a connection. There's something that I call the hidden paycheck. People go to work with leaders that they like and they trust. We can't put a dollar value on that. That's community and that's culture and that's belonging. Those modern leaders who can create that bond, that glue in their organizations, they will win. They will be able to attract and retain leaders that they need for the future.
When discussing the war for talent, we talk broadly about roles across the insurance lifecycle, but one particular trouble spot is the claims organization. And speaking from experience, that's actually where I started my career in insurance over 20 years ago. As the skills and expertise of adjusters and claims organization leaders get harder to come by, that becomes a significant problem, especially as we see the volume of natural disasters continue to grow each year. Whether it's claims, though, or underwriting, or anything else, technology is supposed to help offload some workloads and offset some skill gaps. And we'll dig more into that a little later, Margaret. But what do organizations need to consider when looking to recruit the right individuals to handle complex claims and increasingly complex claims organizations?
Laura, bringing up claims is so important. I really think in terms of a battleground and an area to focus on, claims continues to be a hotspot. There is an aging workforce. Claims is probably one of the most aged in our sector. Claims is where the promise is kept. I started in claims too, Laura, many years ago, and learned that claims is not the back door of an organization, it's the front door. And speaking about modern leaders, I think there is a modern claims leader, one that understands the business, understands technology, someone who understands the importance of collaboration and building connections with underwriting, with actuarial, with data, with technology. It's not a siloed role. And those modern claims professionals are able to navigate the complexities because they aren't just operating in their own silo, they're partnering.
That is incredibly astute. All of us could take a little bit of that advice in our roles, especially about the establishing relationships and connecting with other groups. Well said. What other potential trouble spots beyond claims do you see coming to the forefront that maybe many organizations haven't yet recognized?
I would be remiss if I didn't bring up generative AI. Everyone is looking to harness that great tool. And in so many ways, we are pioneering. No one has all the answers. But I do think that when we think about AI, we're not just thinking about technology. We're not talking about data. We're talking about actuarial. We're talking about underwriting. We're talking about claims. We're talking about ways to create these wonderful efficiencies and opportunities, but doing it with ethics, with a human lens. That's the opportunity. That's the challenge. So I don't have the answers, but I know that there are opportunities and roles that are being created as we speak today for those leaders who are going to help to navigate, to guide, and to pioneer as we go forward.
Yeah, I've seen a number of our carriers now hire for new roles such as auditor, an ethicist,
yes,
an AI trainer. Mm-hmm. So what you're saying is completely spot on, and we're seeing carriers actually do that. Are there any roles that you're seeing that maybe would be quite interesting for maybe a Gen Z to get involved in for the sexy industry of insurance?
Copilot is one that I've heard as a title. Someone who is a copilot on design, execution, that audit function that you talk about, kind of inbred in that. So there's some functions I think that have all of those prongs. The audit, the quality assurance, the training, the evangelism, if you will, and someone who is making sure that we are not promoting unconscious bias that we've worked so hard to work through. No one wants to see us go backward. So I really do see this as a great way to welcome in Gen Z talent because it is exciting. It is sexy. It is new. And there's no playbook yet. So to be able to come in and do this, it's fabulous.
Excellent. Such great information. When we come back after this short break, we'll continue our conversation about the war for talent in P&C insurance with Margaret Russey Milken, Global Insurance Practice Leader at Diversified Search Group. So don't go anywhere.
Digging InsureTalk with Laura Drabik? Be sure to subscribe on Amazon, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. While you're at it, rate the show on Apple Podcasts and let us know how we're doing. Now, let's get back to the show.
And welcome back to InsureTalk. This is Laura Drabik, and I'm talking with Margaret Russey Milken, Global Insurance Practice Leader at Diversified Search Group. Margaret, during our first segment, we talked about the aging workforce and its impact on the war for talent in P&C. I was reading a February piece in Property Casualty 360, which called for carriers to consider augmenting their workforce with an on-demand workforce, at least for the claims organizations. The idea is a 1099-based worker roster to address staffing pain points. This could include outsourcing property loss services to experienced, credentialed professionals who can conduct on-site inspections for overwhelmed adjusters. These kinds of 1099 networks have grown more than, I think, 30% in compounded average growth rate over the past decade. And I can see pros and cons to the approach operationally. But Margaret, if carriers increasingly gravitate towards such scenarios, what would the impact be on the kinds of senior leaders organizations would need to put in place to manage both an internal and external ad hoc workforce?
Laura, you raise a really good point. There has to be a balance. I am a big proponent of the augmented workforce. I think it's smart. I think it's a way to continue knowledge transfer, to give so much flexibility, not just to the organization, but to that professional who's looking for their next chapter, who doesn't want to work full-time anymore. They've been at it for 30, 35 years, but they're not ready to be in a complete retirement mode. This interim opportunity, working when you want to work, how you want to work, I think it's here to stay. But it is sensitive. It is tedious. I think it does take a leader who knows, yes, I have this 1099 workforce, but let me still keep up my training, my apprenticeship, building my talent pipeline, because it's not the only solution. Back to the multi-lens, I think this is one solution. It's not the whole answer. So we still have to bring in fresh talent. We still have to go out of industry. We still have to look at the career changer, and we still have to keep the training going. I think all five of those generations, we can't just say, here's the silver bullet, this is the answer, so we can stop. I think it's one piece to the puzzle.
I mentioned before the break that technology, automation, digitalization, artificial intelligence, you name it, can also mitigate workloads and a shortage of skilled talent. I mean, that's a major part of what the Guidewire platform and our solutions ecosystems enable for carriers every single day. But Margaret, I want to get your read as a seasoned talent strategist. How do modern insurance technologies impact the approach carriers and their executive search partners take in recruiting talent for P&C leadership roles?
So Laura, I'll tell you that once an executive leader finds out about the role, they'll ask about the culture, they'll ask about the scope of the role. The next thing they'll ask is about the technology. What is the platform? Where is the organization on the journey? How committed is this organization to technology, to innovation, to transformation? They want to know that. It doesn't matter what the role is. It isn't just the CIO, CTO, cyber officers, data analytics officers asking these questions. It's every area, whether it's claims or actuarial or underwriting or product management, marketing, human resources. Everyone wants to know about technology.
Are there any particular operational areas that you're finding especially challenging in terms of placing executive talent with both domain and technology expertise?
I think there's a real cry in the market, and it's continued, for that leader who has a blended background, someone who's come out of the business, understands the products, the P&L, those real accountability issues, but also someone who is deep in technology modernization issues. Finding that right blend and that right balance continues to be a challenge and an opportunity. They're the unicorns out there. They might be the rainbow spotted psychedelic unicorns, in fact.
That's a great way to describe it. I had an image running through my head of this valuable role as a unicorn, and glitter, of course, flying everywhere.
Of course, of course.
Okay, let's look at the other side of that. Are there any areas where the rising use of disruptive technology opens up new opportunities for the kinds of executive leadership you place?
What I do think, Laura, is that as insurance is seen and put in the spotlight as an industry, as a sector that is robust, the that is growing, that is successful, that is recession-proof and pandemic-proof, we're going to be able to attract great leaders from other areas, other sectors, more than ever before, because insurance is attractive. Insurance is sexy. Insurance is growing. It's a bright spot. It continues to be a bright spot in the economy. That's not just here in the U.S. That's globally. So I do think that that spotlight on insurance is wonderful. I think if I do have to caution us, is the spotlight's on insurance. So other sectors are going to see our talent more than ever before. So it's really incumbent on organizations to make sure that they are engaging and retaining and continuing to welcome in, to grow, to develop, to cultivate, to celebrate their teams, because those teams are in demand.
Great. Thanks, Margaret. We'll continue the conversation on the other side of this break, so don't touch that dial.
Loving InsureTalk with Laura Drabik? For more expert insights and inspiration, subscribe to Laura's email newsletter at drabikdigest.com, your one-stop resource for Laura's latest blog posts, videos, podcasts, articles, and more. That's www.drabikdigest.com. Now let's get back to the show.
And welcome back. This is InsureTalk with Laura Drabik, and we're talking the war for talent with Margaret Resse-Milkent, Global Insurance Practice Leader at Diversified Search Group. Before the break, we discussed the impact of modern insurance technologies on executive searches. And one of the things we talked a lot about on this show is the idea that the future of P&C innovation is both digital and human. So the real P&C innovation requires the talents of course, coders, but also philosophers, engineers, but also artists. So in a world where the drumbeat of traditional STEM, meaning science, technology, engineering, and math, dominates the conversation, the conventional wisdom is that innovative tech-forward companies are founded and run by techies. But that's not always the case. You look at leaders at Pinterest, YouTube, Airbnb, and others who hail not from STEM backgrounds, but from the liberal arts and fields like design, literature, political science, and others. So Margaret, what's the prevailing view on this in the P&C industry when organizations come to you, let's say to conduct an executive search, and is it evolving?
I absolutely think it's evolving. And I'm smiling, Laura, because I'm a liberal arts major. I'm an English major. And I've always said to liberal arts students, your liberal arts degree is going to give you a great foundation to do anything. You know how to think critically. You know how to write. You know how to communicate. You're a problem solver. These are talents that are transferable and needed in insurance right now. So I'm a big believer in this. I've seen it. I've lived it. We're on the front end of this in insurance, but I do think that it's a great way not only to look at emerging talent, really being able to recruit that liberal arts candidate, whether they're an English major or a philosophy major or an anthropology major. These are people that can work hand in glove with those that have a very specific focus in actuarial science, risk management, engineering, because those liberal arts grads are going to offer another way of thinking, another way of communicating, another way of problem solving. And I think that when we get that variety, that intersectionality and diversity of thought, it really does make a difference.
Really well put. So I know that you're a champion of diversity, of equity, and inclusion, or DEI. And many of the issues we've been discussing regarding the aging workforce, technology, educational, professional backgrounds apply to any discussion on DEI. And according to McKinsey, organizations with a diverse gender inclusive workforce are 21% more likely to outperform peers on profitability. But even today, and even in P&C insurance, misconceptions persist, I think, around DEI policies. And those misconceptions can create, of course, pushback. Given the stakes, I'm curious about the state of DEI policies in executive ranks and leadership positions within carriers, as well as insurtechs and other areas in the P&C ecosystem. So, Margaret, where is the industry with DEI in senior roles, and what can organizations do better to create the most competitive leadership infrastructure possible?
Laura, this is such an important time in our journey of DEIB, and it's a journey that has been evolving. It isn't the same journey that we were on 10 years ago, 5 years ago, or even last year. I think that we see a shift right now to belonging, to culture, to representation, to equity. These are important. They're not buzzwords. They are the real work of inclusion. So when I talk about what I'm doing today, I talk about the work of inclusion, the actual practical, in the weeds, ground war kind of work that we're doing, whether it's peer mentoring or peer networking, where relationships matter. Executive female leaders mentoring each other, listening to each other, lifting each other up, amplifying the voices. This is real. This is where the work is getting done. So it's not the time for rhetoric. We did that. It is always a time for education, of course, but it's a time for action. It's a time for doing. And back to the ROI, we know that this makes a difference. We know intersectionality makes a difference. And we've seen great strides in your own organization, in organizations throughout the PNC sector. We have so many female PNC presidents and CEOs that we didn't have 5 years ago. This is a wonderful celebration on International Women's Day to be able to lift those women up and say, they're there. Now, I will say we've got more work to do because we've done well for white women. We need to do better for women of color. We need to do better for men of color. We need to do better for the LGBTQ community and the neurodiverse community. And we need to make sure that age diversity is woven into everything that we're doing. But it's that diversity of thought that you and I talked about. When we shake it up, we get a better outcome.
Couldn't agree more. So how can DEI in executive placement aid in the war for talent and the never-ending battle for innovation?
I think that when we bring in intentionally diverse talent, it makes a difference. Being inclusive in thought, in action, bringing those different voices and lenses to the table, that makes the difference. That does impact the bottom line. It impacts strategy. It impacts thought. And optics do matter. So especially, I'm going to say for Gen Z, they want to be with an organization that they trust, they admire, that they can look into that organization and see someone who looks like them. That is so important. And I think that that's an important mission, but it is attainable. Sometimes I've heard people say, oh, that talent doesn't exist. They're not there. Oh, yes, they are. There are great, talented men, women, people of color, LGBTQ, neurodiverse out there. What we have to do is be intentional as we're thinking, as we're learning, as we're growing together. And welcome in, don't screen out.
So in addition to DEI, being a mentor is personally meaningful to you. What advice would you give to members of underrepresented groups to advance their careers so that they might one day get a call from the Margaret Resty Milkins of the world conducting an executive search for the top echelons of an organization in PNC?
Laura, thank you for that. You're making me blush, but I will say this, whether you're at this and you're just emerging into the industry, I say a warm welcome to those of you who are rising into the C-suite or the boardroom. I say hooray. What I think is important to do is do it. Be visible. Volunteer. Ask for the stretch assignments. Go on the panels. Do a keynote. Do a podcast. Do a webinar. The visibility and the exposure is tremendous. It's going to stretch you and your thinking, but it's also going to get you on the radar. You want to be the person that is quoted, that is a thought leader, that is trusted as a resource, as an advisor. And mentoring, as we said earlier, is two-way. I think that the best leaders have a personal advisory board. What do I mean by that? That is a small, trusted group that leader or emerging leader can go to for career advice, for life advice, for that moment that matter conversations where it might be a lifestyle change, a career change, elevating up. That personal advisory board is there for you in a different way than a mentor. This is the person that can look at you critically and say, this isn't working. Maybe you should try this. But being able to be humble and vulnerable and accepting that advice, asking for that advice, those simple words, I need your help. People will help. And to form a personal advisory board, it isn't rocket science. Think about the people that you know, you respect, you've learned from, you've role modeled. It can be in the business, it can be outside of the business, it could be a former professor, it could be a former mentor or leader, someone who's retired, somebody that's emerging in their career that can give you some real world perspective. Getting that pulse check is so important as we grow and develop.
Margaret, thank you so much for your time today and for your incredible insights. You've shown us it's not just about ideas, it's about making ideas happen.
Laura, thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Tune in next time for an all-new episode of Insure Talk with Laura Drabik, brought to you by Guidewire, the platform PNC insurers trust to engage, innovate, and grow efficiently. For more information, visit guidewire.com.